welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And we have another great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality. I hope you have come here for that reason, to hear this and maybe to participate if you would like to call in. And you can at 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. And if you're in Canada, how about 888-815-9756? And we're going to continue today with this show dealing with the general subject of what we'll call the life of souls and how souls live their life while we, or in this case today, while they are joined with their counterpart, which is now a fully developed and ascended soul. But in the past, it's been while we live here, or how group souls function with their life entities. Today, it's going to be about the ascended souls. So it should be very interesting. I'm hoping that we will all find that to be of some, we'll call it, general interest. Now, let me continue on and also mention to you that I'm making a few adjustments here on my board. I hope it isn't screwing up the engineer at the other side of this, but I'm just making a slight adjustment. Let me just, my board is adjusted. This is a strange thing. I'm doing a show, for those of you who may not know this, on Sundays, and it's across the country. And it's a live show broadcast as well over the internet. And so we've got to adjust everything for that show. Then I've got to kind of come in here and tweak things for this show so that hopefully everybody can hear me and I'm coming through loud and clear. All right. So let me begin with a summary of the last three shows that we've had. And that is that souls are living in existence while they're confined in their life in the higher mental world, that is not the same as the life forms that they ensoul and that they have a charge over. And their life in the higher mental world really is more rich, much more, we'll call it, developed, has more meaning than the life of either plants or animals, even minerals, or, of course, humans. So even we are living a much less meaningful life than the soul that we are connected to, that we eventually go back to being, by the way. Now, the interesting part about this is that from the soul's perspective, we are only a fraction of the life that it exists in, but a very important fraction, because the soul cannot exist in the three lower realms, the lower mental, the astral, and especially the etheric physical worlds. These are dimensions of time and space that their incarnates or the life forms that they inform live in. They can't live there because to do so, they would have to take on bodies and senses, which would reduce their general consciousness of being a soul. And that is not a good thing, of course. They wouldn't like that. And they would forget who they are, just the way we would forget who we are if we're talking about a human soul. So the soul has to stay detached and in their own realm. While in that state, they live a much more meaningful life, yet we, as an example, are living a diminished life, but that diminishment is extremely important because we are contributing to the growth of our creator and the soul's creator in the three lower worlds, where the soul cannot exist without developing the same levels or similar levels of illusion that we have, which would create chaos and an unfortunate situation in which the soul would not be able to continue on and develop itself as quickly as it can otherwise. So it's a pretty important thing. And I think that most people do get a little confused by that. It's one of those things that isn't easy to explain because you've got these two different beings that really are connected, yet they are not so during part of the experience that they're having. And they're actually living different lives. Okay, so what happens eventually, as I described last week, is the soul eventually develops such a great understanding and great sense the two have to go hand in hand, of the lower three worlds, that it's able to create a body and senses with the help of its incarnates, the last ones that it creates, human beings, in other words, us, and those incarnates are capable of eventually joining together the senses in their three bodies and their awareness with understanding, complete understanding, of what these three worlds are and how to co-create with the Creator more of that Creator in virtually all activities that they do. Once that is achieved, the soul has mastered, that's the word that is usually used, I'm not using it as a colloquialism, I'm using it as a functionally definable part of its existence, as I just described. It has mastered the three lower worlds. And this makes the soul into something different. Because as it joins with these last incarnates, and especially the very last one, it becomes something different than it has ever been as a human soul, or prior to that, as a conglomerate coming from many different group souls and developing itself into a human soul. So now it's becoming something brand new. And you might say, what is that? How does it get to be more than what this great being is, as we have discussed over many different shows? And the answer is that it no longer is confined in its consciousness and in its life to a small section, we'll call it, of the higher monastic world, the higher mental world. It now can be freed to experience life from a new dimension of time and space. This new dimension has been built slowly in the incarnates, the last incarnates that the soul created, in their own bodies that are incompletely built, called the Buddhic body, or some people call it the intuitional body. And these senses and awareness of this higher dimension, greater than the monastic, are incomplete. But the soul is capable of actually completing the process once the last, very last, of the human incarnates does a number of, I'll describe these in a little bit, a number of very important activities and has carried through these activities with complete understanding and full awareness. Then, at that point, the soul can ascend. You've heard that word probably before, and move itself literally on its own to, instead of being on the second subplane, the middle, the very middle, it's kind of a strange way of describing it, the very middle of the second subplane of the mental plane, to the fourth subplane of the Buddhic plane. This is like a big jump. It's hard to describe it in terms of something that we're familiar with. And I'll try to do this as the program goes on by just describing the life of the soul in the Buddhic realm. But to describe it right now would be very obtuse and abstruse, actually, would be the better word. And it would not make much sense to a lot of people until I put it in context. So I'll hold off on that. But that's where the ascended soul, the ascended human soul, which is now a superhuman soul once it ascends, resides. And it resides there with many other souls, of course. It doesn't just go off on its own. But it's important to realize that this is a natural development. This is the way things are supposed to be. It is not some kind of alien thing that's coming from another planet. It's not a condition that is only relegated to just a few for all time of humanity. Today, in the present time, very few people have achieved it. But in the long run, it is inevitable that most of the souls that continue to live in this world, assuming this world survives itself, will go through this process. Now, some will go through it through a process called initiation. Others may do it in a different way, sometime in the distant future. But for the near future, we can say that the souls that will do this will do it through a process called initiation, which we also have discussed in prior shows. And if you listen to my Sunday show, which I hope you do, you'll hear more about that process too. So I'm kind of like joining these two subjects together to some extent. And for those of you who have the time and seek to do so, can listen to both shows, and you'll get a bit more out of them, I think. All right. So let's try to take this a little bit at a time and see how this whole thing comes about. We have the last two or three lifetimes of a human being that is very advanced, has gone through initiatory processes. What does that mean? They have created themselves by unifying their senses, one body at a time, into something that is getting more and more outside of the human kingdom and moving into some other kingdom we'll call the superhuman. Some people call it the masters. Some people call it the ascended masters. So see, all these words sometimes apply to the same thing. And the purpose of doing this is that service and the co-creation of their creator is greatly expanded if a person and their soul becomes fully aware and fully understands the three lower worlds where God is hardest to co-create with, and where God is hardest to develop more of its thought or spiritualness within those worlds. The reason it's so hard is because the energy is so dense and the responsive energy is so limited. Consequently, great difficulty and forces are built up. And forces is one energy against another, usually because they are very inertial or lack the ability to move very easily, and especially to follow any kind of thought except gravity itself. And unfortunately, this is common in the lower worlds. So ultimately, to overcome these problems in the lower worlds, it takes great beings, greater than most human beings exist as, to produce great effects. Yes, humans collectively are able to make small progress over time, but these beings on their own can do remarkable, miraculous changes in activities and in surrounding energies. They don't necessarily choose to do that all the time, and I'll explain why in a few minutes, but nonetheless, they are capable of doing that, and that's so important. The capacity sometimes is more important than just the doingness. Many times the opposite is true, but in this particular case, I think you'll see why the capacity is so important. Okay, so this occurs because of hundreds, literally hundreds, as much as 700 to 800 in many cases, lifetimes have gone by in a soul's development, a human soul's development. And during that time, the human soul is becoming more and more adept at providing service in the lower three worlds, especially in the etheric physical, where I'm, and you, of course, are hearing me and where I'm speaking from. This is the key. This is the hardest place to produce great amounts of virtue, and the hardest place for most human beings to do so because they are, unfortunately, an illusion. This illusion is swept away when a person develops the capacity to make great changes on their own. And when they become, many people's idea of anyway, sort of like a little demigod or godlike in some respects, these great abilities are created within themselves. You might say, well, if these beings really exist, and if they're running around out there and they're still human and they're still here with us, at least to some extent, why aren't they just correcting all the darn problems if they have these capabilities? And I'm going to give you an answer now. The answer is that to usurp the creative abilities and do everything themselves causes greater harm to the common good of all other humans. Let me explain. Let's say that you've got the greatest ability to build a house. And you decide, well, you know what? All these people are building these crummy houses that are very inefficient. They fall down around them. They're that really don't last very long. They're uncomfortable. They're dangerous. I can build a house a second with just thinking about it. And I can build all the houses that are ever needed in a year in one day of my life. Very efficient. Get it done. The problem is, in doing that, let's say that this could be chosen to be done. In other words, the capability is there, and then it is exercised. The result is that all the rest of humanity never learns, never develops, never overcomes the illusion of not being able to build a house. And they never know how to do it in a correct way because the great ones are doing it all for them. Now you understand, I hope, why capability sometimes gives one great ability that is not exercised, because it has to be allowed that humans do live in illusion by their own choices and choose over time to make changes in those choices and to develop in themselves the capabilities rather than to just build houses. So the goals of life that many people have are not the goals of these greater beings or even anybody who might reach a certain level of spiritual wisdom, because those goals usurp and even destroy the ability for others to become more conscious, for others to become more aware before they're even more conscious. And so consequently, it's not a good thing. It's maybe a very bad thing. And the goal is to develop higher consciousness in others rather than to achieve building houses or other activities that seem to be so important at the time. So one of the pressures, one of the difficulties that those who are at the last, say, few lifetimes, who are incarnates of advanced souls, have to overcome is this desire, and sometimes it's a strong one, and the seemingly goodness that seems to be personal, or at least seems to be for some few people rather than all people, to do activities that they are capable of doing that seems to serve a smaller group of people, but it actually is, as I described, usurping the ability for the common good, the greater good, to develop themselves. And in some cases, it's even true, it usurps the ability for all to develop themselves, depending upon the circumstances. This is a problem, and it's not an easy one to overcome, because as we become more capable through this developmental process, humans have a natural tendency to want to take action, because that's part of God's plan. So in a sense, a human being has to give up some of their humanity to develop the greater humanity, the greater good, and to advance themselves beyond being human. Part of being something greater than human is to not exercise one of the qualities of humanity, which is generally a good quality, which is to balance out one's capabilities with one's activities. That's a general principle for most of the lives of most human beings that is a good thing and applies. But it goes out the window and it becomes contradictory as humans advance themselves through what are called the stages of discipleship, the levels of discipleship, and especially true at the end of each of the levels of discipleship, and then at the very end of the entire series of discipleship in which a person is moving from being a human being to becoming a superhuman being. So in order to become an ascended soul, I hope you've been following all this. I'm throwing out a lot of information, I know. In order to become an ascended soul, that person that is very connected now with their soul, but not completely, has to sacrifice the desire and the ability to do most of the creation themselves and to allow others who are probably not going to do it anywhere near as good to screw up, to be an illusion, to be selfish, and in some cases, harm people, including and especially the person that is doing the sacrificing. Now, talk about a real contradictory and even paradoxical position to be in. Here you're capable of doing activities at a near super or a completed superhuman ability with virtually no illusion and no mistakes, creating great beauty and perfection. And instead, the choice is made to stand back and say, well, that's not wise. Because for the common good and even for the specific good in some circumstances, it is better to do nothing and allow others to do what may be a meager, if any, accomplishment under the same situations. This is critical. And most of the last couple, two, three lifetimes that a human being is living, they are faced with quandaries. I mean, their life daily is filled with these issues about this very thing that I'm talking about. In other words, it becomes like an all-encompassing quagmire that they find themselves into and very difficult to get out of. And sometimes they are literally destroyed. I mean, destroyed in the sense of their physical bodies or their astral bodies by those around them that they choose to not usurp their activities, and they allow the others to do destructive acts that may destroy them as well. Isn't that something? You might say, well, why? Because they consider themselves one with all, as the soul does. The test of this is to live as a soul while you are living in the physical, astral, and lower mental worlds. You have to achieve that state. And that is a very difficult state compared to where the soul actually lives while we are here in the higher mental world. They don't have this quandary. They live with other beings who share the same consciousness, and they don't have these issues. Whereas the incarnates here that are going through this are suffering immensely, are sometimes and maybe even frequently destroyed by those that they are serving. And part of their service is to not take action, to not do what others aren't doing for themselves, and to not try to even save some people that they would like to save, because those people first have to be given the opportunity to fail, and in their failing they may become destructive to themselves, to others, and to even those that we're talking about who could save them, but they choose not to. Okay, so you might say, well, do they always do this? No, there are rare exceptions in which the better wisdom is to intervene. But most of the time, they do. And now I'm going to tell you that all ascended souls, those that no longer are living their lives in separation from one part of the lower dimensions to the other. In other words, the old lower dimensions are just one place to them, one sense they have of all those dimensions at the same time. Those beings live by the same creed. They have to. Because if they were to use their capabilities to make the world a better place, humans would become completely superfluous and unfortunately significantly and forever damaged, so that the result would be, as the superhumans keep moving on, there would be no humans to replace them, and humans as a kingdom would fall apart, which eventually would destroy the lower kingdoms as well. So it's very dangerous if superhumans, those that are ascended souls, do not get and do not function within the wisdom that I'm describing, even though it's immensely difficult at times for them, because they have to ignore the pleadings of a population or groups who are in tremendous pain and suffering due to their own serious lacks of judgment and errors and selfishness and illusion. They at times can intervene, rarely, but in many other circumstances they cannot, and the results can be very difficult. I want you to also realize that these ascended souls are actually experiencing more and more of their Creator. God itself is going through the same quagmire that we are talking about, that advanced humans and ascended humans or ascended souls are also living through. God chose this because it wants the lower parts of life, all parts of life actually, to grow with freedom and to be able to develop itself without being significantly intervened with and controlled to the point where that life becomes superfluous to God's. Hope you are following this. This is a little complicated, and some of you may have some questions. If you do, you can call now, or you can email me, or whatever you would like to do, because this is really such an important element to understanding what the difference is between an ascended soul, which is what today's program is about, and those that are not yet in that category. So ascended souls, in order to get there, so to speak, have to have gone through this incredible test of several, two, three lifetimes at a minimum, and many lifetimes before that, and as many as dozens, at smaller amounts, of incremental amounts, of being tested on this very idea of sacrificing the capacity brought into activity, sacrificing the activity and gaining more and more capacity with taking less and less activity, and the results can be quite a bit of suffering and sometimes even destructive to them. They have to go through that, and they have to be able to meet the challenges that sometimes are incredible. I think we have somebody calling in right now. Are you there, caller?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who is this?
This is JoJo.
Hi, JoJo. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, we're about to go to break, JoJo. Can I ask you to stay on the line for about a couple of minutes and then come back?
Absolutely.
All right. Don't go away now. I'm really interested in hearing what you have to say and whatever you want to say.
Okay.
So we're gonna go to break right now, and we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hon, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and I hope we still have our caller online. Are you there, JoJo?
I'm here now.
Hi. Okay, so go ahead. Tell me what you were going to say. I'm sorry that you got in right at the break there, so come on in. Now we got the rest of the time to talk about it, whatever it is.
No worries. It's perfect timing. This is the first time I've actually heard your show tonight.
Oh, okay. Welcome.
And it's no accident, because what you're talking about in ways has just kind of like lifted some, I don't even know what you'd call it, worry, if nothing else, because the way you were describing about, you know, kind of like watching people destroy themselves.
Sure.
I mean, the last two relationships I've been in, I kind of had to sit there and go, you know, scratch my head and walk away. You know, and they happen to both be suicidal, but there you go with the they can even destroy you when you're standing there watching. And I'm not saying I'm some super being. That's not what I'm getting at. I'm just saying that, you know, in my mind, I was going a little crazy, like, you know, what is happening here in my life? And my dad's a psychiatrist. I've talked with him plenty about both, but it was still like there was a missing, like, okay, but still why? It didn't answer the why it was happening. And what you were just talking about over the last few minutes shed some light, at least for me, on why. And kind of allow me to kind of let myself off the hook, if that makes any sense.
Well, that's good. And I want you to know that you don't have to be in the last few lifetimes or going through any great spiritual journey to understand the wisdom of what I was describing. Because at some level, I would think many people have experienced at least a fraction of this kind of experience. They may not live it every day and every minute, but they, just as you have mentioned, they have it happen in significant moments in their life.
Yeah.
And consequently, it is part of their experience nonetheless. And that's maybe the reason people can understand it, and that's a good thing, because they can identify with part of their life. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, and the way you're describing, like, every day, I mean, I have me very disciplined and determined in my meditations and the way I'm living right now. And it's like, you know, I'm putting in 2 to 5 hours a day of meditation and doing all these things and kind of walking around in this world. It's almost like a hands-off approach. It's almost like observing people and letting them be, you know, and seeing that perfection and their lessons and then, you know, keep moving on. And of course, it's a lot easier when I myself am so busy that I almost have to do the hands-off thing, but it kind of goes in line with what you were talking about. In terms of, you know, being capable of doing things that you see other people doing, but yet not stepping on their free will, not stepping into their lessons and doing it for them and saying, see?
Yeah, and if you think about this, this makes a lot of sense in relationship to the way our universe was created by a great creator who said to itself, I need to have a universe where there is free will, and where life itself, which will be part of my growth, will be able to make its own choices, even if those choices are against my very thought and my very beingness. It will be permitted, that life will be permitted to find on its own either more co-creation with myself, or it will create in a different way, which may be somewhat even destructive to my beingness, but at the same time adds to it because of the free will. The free will is so critical. Without it, we just have a puppet show, and it would be boring, even for our creator.
Yeah, and that's the power of choice. Right?
Absolutely.
And
well, listen, keep listening. I hope you stay in for the rest of the show, and I'm going to continue on our journey now of explaining how souls become ascended. Okay?
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm definitely going to listen. Thank you, Niall.
Okay. You're welcome.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Okay, so let's continue on with the understanding of how a soul becomes an ascended soul. The last few lifetimes become this almost daily, we'll say, probably even hourly, challenge to not intervene, to become detached, but also incredibly compassionate to those that we are serving. Now, I say we, I'm not talking about necessarily just myself or anyone else, but I'm talking about all those who do this in any stage or amount. And so think about it this way. In order to reach the next kingdom, not only does do these incarnates and their very closely associated souls now have to do some of what I said, which is to develop great capabilities. In other words, the senses in the three bodies within each body are unified. Between the bodies, they start becoming unified. So there's like one great super sense of seven senses in each body, that's seven chakras connected to them, times three, which is 21 senses, joining together into one super sense, giving incredible awareness, because even when two senses are joined, much greater awareness is realized. The accuracy of that awareness is tremendous, so almost all the illusion is gone. And then have this capability, but have the wisdom to not use it in an action much of the time because of what I spoke about earlier. And then, this is the biggie, the reason or motive to do this cannot be to become a member of the next kingdom. This is another one of the conditions to get there, so to speak. The motive, the reason that someone is doing it is because they have such great compassion or love for all of life below them, especially for the kingdom from which they're leaving, but especially for those kingdoms even lower than that, such as plants and animals, but also even minerals, all parts of existence. To have such great compassion that their motivation is totally for the benefit of all other life and not for themselves. That's the final condition in order for the soul to ascend. Now, I'm going to explain that more because it may be confusing you. And you might even say, how do you do that? How is it that you really would like to or want to go and become an ascended soul, but then you really don't want to because you've got to have all this compassion, etc.? And it has to do with the soul's perspective. I've been trying to develop the answer to this. I can't really do it from the human perspective, because if I try to do it, I think it does get twisted. So let's try to do it from the soul's perspective, because we're becoming that soul, not vice versa. The soul isn't becoming the human. The human's becoming the soul. So how does a soul have this perspective in the first place, and the human is trying to develop it while they're in the lower three worlds? And the answer is this. To the soul's perspective, it does not live its life as an individual. It creates as an individual to the life of all others, but it lives its life as connected to and part of all the other souls that it exists with. So from the soul's perspective, as a creative being, it is an individual. And it can identify itself as being that individual that can come up with unique and very useful inventions, we'll call them, to solving problems for the good of all and not for its own good. For the good of all and not for its own good. This is the key. In its individuality, it uses its individuality for the benefit of others rather than for the benefit of solely or even mostly itself. It still sees itself as part of all others, so it is benefiting from its creations, but its creations are for the common good, and the common good in the terms of the wisdom that we talked about earlier in the show, where not to benefit others on a personal level or some selfish level, but to benefit others so that they function more as souls themselves rather than as selfish beings. So this is the last part of the ingredient that is so difficult to gather and to have. And this part grows as one exercises their individuality for the common good. So if we're talking about an incarnate in the last few lifetimes of a soul, that incarnate has to be incredibly creative, but the creations that it makes have to be for the benefit of the common good. And the common good has to be for the highest and best of the common good and not for some superficial average level or for just some personals or for just a few. It has to be for the most amount of the good, the most amount of time at the highest level possible that can be achieved at that time. This is quite an equation, believe me, to try to live one's life by while one is living in the three lower worlds where illusion still wants to take its toll on the person. Great, great mastery over the illusions by having tremendous sense and then even greater consciousness, meaning the ability to take the information from that sense, build whole knowledge that allows that person to be incredibly creative in ways that applies to the common good in the most and best ways of all. Now, that's the challenge. And in order to accomplish the ascension of their own soul, the human, the incarnate, has to achieve this result at growing levels, at very high expectations and levels, while they're alive physically, astrally, and lower mentally. Eventually, they have to be able to do it almost simultaneously while they're living in any one of those three worlds. And it's a very difficult process because the challenges oftentimes are in the weakest areas that remain within that individual, within that human's, we'll call it foibles. Some people call it fetters. And so the person is challenged in the ways that they are weakest, not the ways they are strongest. You could say, well, who challenges them? Well, it's kind of based upon certain karmic principles. It's not like someone is judging you and making up tests. The tests are kind of made up by the natural order of how events are connected together. But ultimately, it's challenged based upon the needs of the many and the needs of the world that the person is on in comparison to what small needs the person has left as desires within themselves and that are still somewhat selfish in relative terms. So this is a challenge, and it's a great challenge. And believe it or not, eventually all humans will, well, almost all humans, except for those who choose a path of evil, will eventually reach the level where they do go through this process. And Some of them will do it through an initiatory process where they only have to get to a certain level and then they're pushed ahead by help from those beings who have already achieved this. And then they have to kind of scratch and claw to stay at that higher level. And then at some point, this initiatory process may not be used, at least in this world, and it isn't used in most others. And then it doesn't require as much scratching and clawing to stay at the level because it's a much slower, more natural process. But in any case, it is quite a challenge to reach this third and last part of it, which requires great compassion for all of life. The compassion, or love, comes from the givingness of all creation on the part of the individual towards the highest and best good for the remaining life that they can touch and have some effect on, which in this case is a worldwide scale of effect. So those that are at this stage are really thinking about and concerned about the whole world, and sometimes even other worlds, believe it or not, rather than one small part of life. They think very large instead of very small. They many times are misunderstood because of this. Because while others are thinking about very small fractions of life around them, these beings who are ascending are thinking in such large terms that others can't even understand what their thought is about. And they misconstrue it many times and think wrongly about what these people are doing. The ascended soul, or the soul about to be ascended, is waiting for its incarnate, the last of the few, to resolve all the issues that I just described and to achieve mastery over them, to have complete compassion for humanity while they are suffering incredible consequences by those that they serve while they are giving the most amount of their all of their co-created individuality to the to all others for the benefit and good of the most and the best that can be achieved at the time in life, with an incredible detachment of whatever the negative results are to themselves. This is the test, and when they have achieved this test, then they join back to their souls in full consciousness, which they've been doing for a number of lifetimes, but this time they're not coming back. This is the end of their incarnations in the lower three worlds. They fully join their soul in the higher mental world, and the soul has already been living as I described in last week's program. So if you listen to last week, you'll know what I'm talking about. The soul has been living there and has already the kind of life I described, which is an amazing life. So they join in that life, and they may spend, by our standards, hundreds of years, up to maybe 1,000 or so, in mental term years, mental time years. This is not as long as we think because of the dilation effect of time. And so it's maybe a few decades in terms of physical world time, but to their reality, it's much longer than that. And they spend this time in what is called the fourth subplane or the second subplane. I know who wants to hear all those numbers in the mental world, and they're completing out their work with the other souls around them. They're spending most of their time sharing how they achieved what they achieved and where they found answers to the problems that they specifically had, so all the other souls have an understanding of it. And they share this in various, again, virtual scenarios so the other souls can see it in action as they interplay with each other in future parts of their lifetimes. Now, of course, they won't be part of those futures, but others can step in and take their place, because they're going to be leaving at the time, at the end of this educational sharing that they're doing of this last lifetime or lifetimes that they went through. And so eventually the soul has nothing more, really. It can contribute to those that it has become so one with as a non-ascended, or some people call it an imprisoned, I think that's a little over the top, soul in the higher mental world. And they now free themselves by literally releasing all of the energy that made them part of the mental world. So all the energy that was part of their higher mental body is now freed. And then, at that point, there's nothing, literally, that holds them into the lower mental world, because there's no part of them that is made out of energies from the lower mental world down, and they can ascend into Buddhic energy, or some people will call it intuitional energy, and go to the fourth subplane, the very center of the intuitional plane, to develop a whole new kind of life. And the next few minutes I'll tell you something about that life. They are now what is considered to be an ascended master. They're considered a master, some people call it, of ageless wisdom, master of the ages, master of... There's lots of masters. But they're all pretty much the same thing, because there's only one way to be this way, as I just described it. And they are still in the world that they have been developing in. They stay with that world in most circumstances. And they're going to serve, but not always serve, in ways that connect them to humans. Their service is going to be connected to various forms of life in the on that world. And sometimes their focus is not on humans at all. It's mostly on the energy parts of life. Sometimes they focus on one or more of the lower kingdoms below human. Sometimes they're focused in service in the Sanzan. Those above them in the level of development of life. But no matter how they choose to serve, they are serving in ways that are now even more creative. They are not less of an individual, which some people in error think so. They become a greater individual in their creativity, but the whole that they are serving is much larger. They are even selecting their very, we'll call it, larger whole that they're going to be connected to. They now have more freedom to choose how they're going to co-create with their creator in ways that go beyond our true understanding of it. I can tell you more about it. I won't be able to tell you too much because we'll run out of time. But some of it involves the ability to make changes in the way life will develop in the world, not how it has or is, but how it will. They start getting into the true creation of life even thousands of years into the future. In the very beginning of it, they're still novices, and those ahead of them are the real activity takers. Many times they're consultants. They take only a piece of what a greater being has come up with, and they work with that smaller piece. They also, some of them do stay in service to humanity, and in so doing, they focus in on and try to help those that are in the process of leaving the human kingdom, going through the spiritual initiations, in other words, and who are spiritual disciples, but they don't, again, take away the natural inclination for humans to be illusioned and to unfortunately make mistakes. They seldom involve themselves directly with human beings, and if they do, it's usually while the human beings are being the most creative. It's called during the accepted stages of discipleship, and in the very last stage, which is called the stage of being an arhat. And during these stages, they do have somewhat frequent contact, but during the rest of a spiritual disciple's life, they have very little contact, if any. And that's because of this idea of usurping or taking away from that disciple's ability to face the illusions themselves and deal with their life themselves. So they're involved in doing that if their focus is on humans, and not all of these ascended masters are so focused all the time on that. Be aware of that, because many people are ethnocentric. They think it's all about humanity. And humanity is a very important part of life, but it is not all of life by any stretch of the imagination. Okay, at this point, I'm going to need to move to just giving a few announcements here. For those of you who did not hear last week, I'm on Sundays at 1170 a.m. if you are in the Boston, Norfolk, Providence, Rhode Island area, the northeastern part of the United States, in other words. And if you can, pick me up at that time from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm on live, so you can call in just the way you can into the show. It's wonderful. If you can't come on that broadcast, you can get me through WDISAM.com. And that is, of course, on the Internet. So you can get me that way as well. So you can either 1170, which is WDIS radio, or that's an AM station, or you can get me on WDISAM.com if you want to pick me up on the Internet. And, of course, if you're in a different time zone, you can just figure it out for yourself. This Sunday, I'm going to be speaking about spiritual initiation, Part 4, which ties in with today's show, so you can hear even more about some of the things that I was talking about. The parts that I couldn't include today, you can hear more about those this Sunday. Oh, I'm a sly one. I know. I'm connecting them together. Aren't I doing that? Okay. Also, this coming Monday, I'm going to be speaking over at Mesa Fiesta Borders from 7 p.m. to 8:15. If you're in the Phoenix metropolitan area, come by in Mesa, 1361 South Alma School Road, and hey, join in. We get to talk more. We get to actually meet each other. And I will be there with one of the people that I kind of go serve with in a spiritual group. Her name is Mimi. She'll be there too. But I will be the one who is doing some of the speaking, so please come and join us. And also, finally, next Friday, our subject's going to be death, taxes, and astral life. That's right here on BBS Radio. So if you have a chance to tune in next Friday, that's what we're going to be talking about, of course, here. And that's for next week. So hopefully for this week you have gotten the message of what it's like to be an ascended soul. And until we have our meeting next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is. Thank you.
She comes around here with a license to love. I don't know where she got it. I trusted you, offered everything, but I'm not sure.